Okay, welcome back to Parshas HaShavua. Apologies for yesterday. I got distracted with something really important, and by the time I realized it was a bit late. That's why we pushed it off till today, but normally it's on Tuesday afternoon, same time, 12:45. It's Parshas Shoftim, and Parshas Shoftim, of course, is action-packed, but also Parshas Shoftim is the first Shabbos, the first Parsha that we always read in the month of Elul. So Re'eh, which we learned last Shabbos, is normally either Shabbos Mevorchim Elul or sometimes in Elul itself, but not always. Shoftim is always in Elul, and we know the famous Shaloh HaKadosh, who says that every time we read a parsha in a particular time, it's always connected to that time. So what I want to do is I want to share with you a quick word for the Kli Yoker on the first pasuk, and then share with you two ideas how this parsha ties in to Elul. So the first pasuk tells us the mitzvah of appointing judges and policemen and officers. Pasuk says, "Shoftim v'shoytrim titein lecha judges and officers you shall appoint, you shall put for yourselves in every city, in every gate. It means the cities of the tribes, the way it was divided up in Eretz Yisrael. The Shoftu Esau Mishpat Tzedek, and they will judge the people with a appropriate and upright justice." So the Kli Yoker just comments on two words here in the pasuk that are somewhat odd. And he says, "What do you mean? It says, Shoitrim Meshoitrim, Titein Lacha, officers and judges you shall place for yourself." So then the rest of the pasuk should have flowed the same way. The Shoftu Oischa or Eschem. And they will judge you. What does it mean? V'shoftu es'om, they will judge the nation. In other words, why does the first pasuk talk to you, whoever the you is? And the second part of the pasuk talks about that the nation will judge an upright justice. And also, he comments on the word v'shoftu. He says, if it's a command, it should have been v'yishpetu. If over here the command is to place judges who will then judge in an upright and ethical way, it should have said v'yishpetu. Now, just to clarify, V'shoftu means they will judge, v'yishpetu means they should judge. And because supposedly this is a command, it should be done in the form of v'yishpetu and not v'shoftu. And he says something very beautiful. He says what the pasuk is coming to hint to is the following. The pasuk is actually giving a command, that is true, to appoint judges, but it's also sending a message to the one who appoints the judges. It's obviously always those that appoint the judges. And the Torah is giving a very strong warning to the people or the person appointing the judges. And this is it's a timeless instruction. There are always people in every community that appoint leadership. Says the Torah, Shoftim v'shoytrim, judges and officers, first and foremost, titein lecha, you shall place for you, for yourself, that you should submit to their justice. Because he says there's a trend in many communities, this was going back 400 years ago, right? He says that sometimes people appoint people in positions of leadership with the intention that because they are the one that appointed them, then they can manipulate them and they will bribe them and they will steer them in the way for themselves, the way they want them to be steered. Says the Kli Yoker, the Torah says you can't do that. You have to appoint judges in a clear and objective and an honest way without any ulterior motive, because otherwise they are corrupt. In other words, they are bribed. In other words, they will have other motives and biases, and therefore they won't be a good judge altogether. And he says, this is what the pasuk is teaching. The pasuk is, besides the general command, the pasuk is talking about to the person appointing the judge and saying, Shoftim v'shoytrim titein lecha. First of all, appoint them to you. Accept their authority, accept their leadership, accept their submit to their instructions. And if you do that, you will see not only will they be good judges for you, they will be good judges for the entire nation. And then v'shoftu, they will, it's a promise, they will judge the entire nation with appropriate ethical way of judging, because you have appointed them honestly and with integrity. That's the little nuance that the Kli Yoker points out in this passage. Okay. Now I want to talk to you, just share with you two ideas that are specifically connected to the concept of Elul. The one is a famous idea. I just want to break it down a little bit. It's in the first pasuk. Shoftim v'shoytrim titen lecha b'chol sharecha, place judges, officers on all your gates. The word sharecha means your gates. So the Baali Musar, the masters of ethics, explain, I think this goes back to the Shach al HaTorah, he says this is a general instruction to each individual in their own spiritual journey. And as the Baali Musar point out, this is particularly relevant during Elul. During Elul, when we are reflecting on where we're doing, where we're holding, in terms of our service to Hashem or Avodas Hashem, we're reflecting, we're making an assessment, we're taking stock, and we're hopefully resolving to improve in the future. Says the Pasuk, you need to know, and especially in Elul, that the first step to serving Hashem properly is to not corrupt your decision-making. And the way you do that is, decision-making, of course, comes from the way you think, from your intellect, from the head. But first and foremost, you need to place guards, you need to place judges, officers at all your gates, the gates of your head, the gates of the body, like the eyes, the mouth, and so on. Otherwise, it's impossible to not be corrupted by what you take in that is inappropriate, and then you forget to bring out and to use it out for the positive. There's many ways to explain this. I'll explain it one of the ways that I just learned recently, and that is based on the idea that there are four gates to the human experience. There's the eyes, there's the power of sight, where we look at things and we take in things. There's the ears, how we listen, how we information that we take in. There's the mouth, where we talk, using for speech. And there's the nose, which has two nostrils, which normally is a reference to smell, but we'll soon see what that means. Now, they can be all used in the negative, and they can be all used in the positive, and we need to make sure that we use them appropriately. So how do we use them for the positive? But again, they can only be used for the positive if we don't use them for the negative, which we're going to explain afterwards. In the positive, ra'iyah, to see, is a symbol of clarity. We need to build up our hashkafa. We need to build up our sense of thinking, our perspectives, that we're not ambivalent about how we approach Yiddishkeit. We need to learn and understand and look at things so clearly that godliness and the godly perspective becomes clear for us. And that's, we don't mix it with other things. We don't confuse it with other issues. But everything that we look at during the day, we're seeing clearly the concept of the godly perspective. That is the idea of ra'iyah, right? Seeing things, developing clarity in our values and in our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ears, comes the word shmir, to listen and to understand, like Shema Yisrael, absorb, internalize. And that's the idea of in learning and understanding Hashem's Torah, Hashem's perspective, Hashem's instructions, Hashem's guidance, and all the perspectives that lead to that clarity we spoke about before. The mouth, of course, is a mouth through which we daven. We say words of Torah and tefillah, but particularly davening. Such an important aspect, such an important component to our Keshav with Hashem. Of course, we learn Torah, but that's the whole idea of Shmir. We have to say the words of Torah too, but we have to absorb the knowledge. That's the idea of the ears. We also have to talk to Hashem, which is the idea of Tefillah, and that's the mouth. And the nostrils is a reference to the power of smell, which leads us to think about the Ketores, the incense that was brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And that incense, we know in Kabbalah it explains, was like a korban, but a different type of korban. A korban means when you sacrifice for Hashem, which what that means in the personal experience is I give up some of my animalistic tendencies for Hashem, I sacrifice, I give up time, I give up my etzahara, and so on and so forth. But then and that was outside of the Beis HaMikdash, but then there was a more spiritual connection, a deeper connection with Hashem, and that was Ketores. Ketores actually comes from an Aramaic word, kuf tesh re, kuf tes resh, katar, which means to tie a knot. When two things which are two separate entities become one. Sometimes you can sacrifice for Hashem and that's a korban, but you're still saying remain separate. The Ketores represent a deeper connection which we achieve through tshuva and through really connecting to Hashem and such a bringing out the depth of our neshama, the depth of our bond with Hashem that lies in the deepest level of our neshama, and that's the idea of Ketores, and that's the gate of the nostrils, the gate of the nose, which we have as part of our human experience. How do we make sure these gates are all working for the positive? I'm making sure that the things that are not supposed to come in there don't come in. That's the idea of putting judges and officers at the gates of our head, the gates of our human experience. How does it work? Of course, seeing is the idea of making sure that we don't see and we don't look at intently, of course not, at the things we shouldn't be looking at. There's things we're not supposed to gaze at, we're not supposed to look at, and that's what the eyes represent. Hearing is about hearing things which are negative, toxic conversations where we hear lashon hara, or we hear negativity, we hear toxicity, all those things we have to make sure not to absorb, not to internalize, and not to hear them even, to try and avoid hearing those types of speech, those types of ideas, which sometimes come through our ears, and we need those officers and those judges to make sure they don't come in. Speech, of course, is the idea of using our speech positively and not using it negatively. Obviously, we are called the medaber, we are called the speaker, we are called the communicator. But we have to be careful. We know that excessive speech for no reason can lead to all sorts of breakdown in relationships, breakdown in our spiritual connection. Pirkei Avos tells us that one of the Tanoim said that he grew up among the wise and he never found anything better than shtika, than silence. Now, of course, we're not supposed to be silent all the time. We're supposed to learn, we're supposed to daven, we're supposed to inspire the people. We're supposed to use our speech positively, but that's the point. The point is silence, to be measured, to focus, to understand, and to think before we actually learn, before we actually use our speech. And then there's the nose. The nose is, and this is based on a Gemara, in a brief shir, we don't have time to go into in detail how this works, but the Gemara talks about the idea of smell and negative smell being associated with thought, because that we sort of sometimes when you smell something or you smell like a food or something, you have a very burning desire to consume it. And the Gemara says that hirhurei avera, when we think toxic thoughts, when we think bad thoughts, that is sometimes even worse than the avera itself. And that's the idea of, and the Gemara talks about the idea of smell and the sense of smell and how strong it is. And that's a reference, a symbol for negative thoughts. And that's the putting the officers and the policemen on our nostrils, in other words, to keep out and to chase away toxic and negative thinking, where we have sometimes invading and intruding thoughts that we need to get rid of. So that's the idea, and that's especially relevant in Elul, to understand and to evaluate how those guards and those officers are actually doing in the gates of our own experience. Now, lastly, I wanted to share with you a beautiful idea from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's actually part of a very long and involved talk, but I'll just share with you a very brief point. Towards the end of the parsha, and it's about the importance of waking up during Elul, the foundation of tshuva, to actually wake up, like the Rambam says when you blow the shofar, to wake up and to have a yisoirus, to awaken ourselves, to be inspired, and then to get into the details afterwards. And it goes like this. Towards the end of the parsha, there's the famous part where the Koyanim and the officers talk to the nation of Eretz Yisrael before they go to war. Now, one piece says the following, that whoever has built a house and hasn't lived in it, whoever has built a vineyard and hasn't yet redeemed it when it, in the fourth year when it's holy, whoever has betrothed a woman who hasn't married her yet, all these people should go back, because it hasn't been fully done yet, and the anguish, maybe knowing that someone else might take over, so they're released from the army. And then the Torah says, whoever is scared and soft-hearted, timid, should go back, so they shouldn't discourage the others, they shouldn't bring down the morale. And Rashi brings the famous machloikas in the Gemara between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Haglili. What does it mean, you're scared? Scared about what? So Rabbi Akiva says, scared of war. You can't handle war. You can't handle seeing a gun, a tank, a sword, obviously in biblical times. If you're scared and you're getting closer to going and attacking the enemy, and you're becoming very scared of warfare, it's time to go back. Don't spoil it for others. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Yossi Aglili doesn't want to accept that interpretation for reasons we're not going to go into now, but it's got to do with the fact that that was already covered by a different announcement, or whatever the case is, different difficulties with the first pshat. He says, no. It means anyone who's scared of the averus that they have. A person who's scared of the averus that they have should return back and should not go to war. Now, the Rebbe explained a very beautiful thing, that Rabbi Akiva, that actually this machloi, this argument can be actually translated into fighting the war against the Yetzer Hara, and fighting the war in tshuva, doing tshuva, trying to reflect on the year gone by, and preparing for a better year ahead, spiritually speaking. The better year ahead of all other things that Hashem will take care of, Hashem. We have to do the tshuva. We have to try our hardest. He says the following amazing thing. He says, Rabbi Akiva was always a person who saw the good. And he saw good in others. After all, don't we know the famous Chazal that ve'ahavta le're'acha kamoicha, love your fellow like yourself. Rabbi Akiva oimer zeh klal gadol b'Torah. Rabbi Akiva says this is a very important rule of foundation in the whole Torah. Rabbi Akiva says, I can't accept the other pshat because what are we talking about? A person who's worried about their averus. If they worried about their averus already, meaning obviously it's bothering them that they sinned. If it's bothering them that they sinned, that means they've woken up, they've had his oirus, they've had an awakening of tshuva. Yes, very general and very potential. As soon as the yid has had that waking up call, that wake up call, as soon as the yid says, you know what, I made a couple of mistakes and I really need to fix them, that is already enough. That's already enough to, sorry, that was already enough to say that the averus won't harm him. So therefore, a person who's worried about their averus has nothing to worry about going into war because you've taken care of it already. Hashem has already forgiven you. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. The very fact that you're scared about your averus, that means that that's tshuva. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, on the other hand, says, yes, that's true. But you've got to follow through. You've got to translate that tshuva into details. You've got to make a plan. You've got to strategize. You've got to take upon yourself a step ahead. You've got to take some sort of resolution that will be effective and will be reasonable to expect that you'll fulfill it, and so on and so forth. So you've got to go through the process of vidui and the whole Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur detailed plan of what we do on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in terms of tshuva. So the truth is, therefore, this Rashi is a model for the whole Elul Tishrei journey. This is what he explains. The first thing we have to know, the most important thing during Elul is the Rabbi Akiva model, just to wake up. We start blowing the shofar in Elul. And the Rambam says the shofar is like a wake-up call, just to get us going. Because if we're asleep, nothing else will follow. The wake-up is the foundation. Just to feel woken up, to feel a sense of urgency. The Rabbi Akiva, and we need to know the power of that. That in that waking up call, in that awakening, lies potentially all the details of tshuva. Rabbi Akiva says on one level, it's all taken care of once you wake up. Then also we have to look at Rabbi Yossi Aglili. We have to go through the process. We have to make sure that potential is translated into the details. We have to make a proper preparation for the whole journey, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and Chas Torah, and so on and so forth. That's a bit of a beautiful formula that comes on a spiritual level from this Rashi at the end of Parashat Shoftim. I wish everyone a meaningful Elul, and we should only hear brachas, and of course all Yidden should be benched with the Ksiv, Achsim, HaTovah, and only very, very good things and good brachas. All the best.